This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. 27-year-old postgraduate student Roshini Munyam beat out 1,500 other Malaysians to win the Malaysian chapter of AXIS Apollo Space Race Competition. And now Roshini will compete against 114 winners from around the world in Florida this December for 24 spots to go on a trip of a lifetime, basically 100 kilometres above Mother Earth, and become Malaysia's first female astronaut. Joining her today is Malaysia's second astronaut, Major Dr. Faiz Khalid, and we'll find out how he's been doing since he was selected as the final two candidates in our first Angkasa One programme back in 2007, what advice he has for Roshini, and when he'll be going into space himself. So welcome to the show, the both of you.
Hi.
Thank you.
Roshini, you're quoted in National Daily saying, "I never thought my pastime of watching videos of astronauts could bring me this close to my dream of going into space." How long have you wanted to go up to space?
I guess since I was a child. Yeah, it's been a childhood dream. Being born in the 80s, I grew up watching movies like Star Wars and Star Trek, so space has always been something really cool for me. Yeah.
And so you've always wanted to, you always had that dream then of, you know, someday being an astronaut.
I had a dream of someday being able to go to space and experience that thrill of zero gravity. Yeah, that was the real ultimate dream.
And you're studying in University of Malaya at the moment. What are you doing there?
I'm doing my postgraduate course. I'm studying Master's in English as a second language.
Okay, yeah, that's completely different.
yes, it is.
From being an astronaut. So do you hope that this will kind of parlay into becoming, you know, a second career or something that you pursue? Or is it just something you hope to do once?
Okay, well, the idea of this competition was actually to recruit regular people to get a chance to go to outer space. So that's where I felt that, okay, maybe I didn't get to have that opportunity when I was younger, when I was studying, but now it's open for regular people. So that's how I actually got into this this contest in the first place. And I think that was a good platform for me, but it's not really much of a career in terms of science. I think that's a misunderstanding. This is actually to do with commercial space. It's a very new thing, and it will be coming up sometime next year or the year after. So I'm not sure what a career in commercial space would be like, because it hasn't started actually. Yeah, so we'll see how it goes.
What was the big push for you to register in the competition? I mean, I'm sure lots of people saw it and nobody really thought, okay, I'm going to submit this and I'm going to go for it.
The push was, well, I guess I'm the type, if I see an opportunity, I don't want to waste it, or I would live the rest of my life feeling guilty, and that guilt feeling, you know, it kills you. So when I came across the advertisement, I just thought, you know, just do it. And why not? You know, I think that's always the big question for me. Why not? And if I can't find a reason not to, then I should. Yeah.
Could you walk us through the whole process? What was it like?
Okay, we started with around almost, like you said, 1,500 people signing up for the first round. We had to garner as much votes as we can. That was through the ex-Apollo Space Academy's website. And that was just one person can only vote once. And the top 15 with the highest amount of votes, they will get to be called up for the semifinals. And I really worked hard for that part, because it was quite a tough competition as well to compete with 2,000 over people. And when I got into the top 15, that's when I realized I was the only female. So that was a bit awkward, but I went anyway. So in our semi-final round, that was where we had the mental and physical challenges. It was mostly on coordination. So we had a mixture of quizzes, some skill-based tasks that we had to learn and then immediately do. We had some scuba diving crash course. We had to learn how to build a homemade rocket. In between, we did some first aid as well. So it was like a mixture of all this. We had to do it in a form of a marathon, collect as much points. It was like points collecting. And at the end, oh yeah, we also had an interview, and we had to do a video as well. Yeah, so all that comprised of 70%. And then the top five people with the highest marks, they were brought into the finals. So again, I was the only female in the top five. So there are four other guys. And the five of us, for our final challenge, we had to again garner votes, but this time it was through Facebook alone. And the challenge was people have to vote once every hour. So it was a bigger number to work on, actually. Yeah.
And Dr. Fayez, perhaps you could share the process through which, you know, you became an astronaut.
I was involved in the first Angkasawan program, or the National Astronaut Program. It was in 2007. It is open to public at the time, but there's no voting involved. The stages, mainly they will assess on psychological assessment, physical fitness. There's very thorough medical checkup, general medical checkup, and if you proceed to the second phase, it will be a aerospace medical checkup in Subang military camp, and also there's mainly a teamwork and interviews, and also it's more of the science tests. It was about like 11,000 applicant, and the selection was going on for about a year. And at the end of the day, four of us, I was in one of the final four. We were sent to Russia in the Yuri Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center. There itself, they did the basic cosmonaut requirements test before you get enrolled in the academy. So,
what motivated you to join the program at the beginning?
Well, at the beginning, I saw it. I know it through the papers and also through the official website. It's more about I actually asked myself, what is this program is all about? I did few research on what is an astronaut role in the United States, in Japan, in European Space Agency, and it is actually an individual that was trained and also can contribute through science. Yeah. To the country. So I think it's my background, and also something that I was in the military too. So the military training sort of helped, and I said, why not? Like, yeah, why not we try this and see how far I could go. So that was the pushing factor.
Top four out of 11,000 is really quite a staggering figure, if you think about it. So you mentioned that you went to Russia. What training did you undergo there?
In Russia, the academy is called Yuri Gagarin Cosmonaut Training Center. It's it's where actually the first men who go to space train. Yeah. Before, it was a very close, it's sort of like a university, close university for you graduate as an astronaut, cosmonaut, yeah? And now it's more visible, people know it, it's in Moscow, and we were sent there. The training is about a year plus. Like I said, it's just like university, comprises of, university stuff, like you have to go through lectures, lecture halls, and you have to finish your credit hour. There's exams every week. Some of the subject is it's related, you know, to engineering, like spacecraft engineering, system in space, how the life support system, and also medical aerospace. Yeah, that you have to know medical physiology of space, and also medical tests, which is very taxing because you have to like will be tested every 3 months. It's not fun. And also gym class. They will train you to become an astronaut to ensure that your body is capable of taking those forces which you know which is required to go to space. Yeah.
So it's a very holistic approach in a way. You know, they train you body and mind and mental preparedness as well.
Right, yeah.
Okay. With me today is Rushini Muniam, postgraduate student from University Malaya, who may become Malaysia's first female astronaut, and Major Dr. Faiz Khalid, astronaut at the Malaysian National Space Agency. We're discussing what it takes to be an astronaut. When we come back, we'll take a look at more about what Rushini went through and, you know, what it was like being the only female in the finals on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture with me, Lee Chui Lin. And in the studio with me is Rushini Muniam, postgraduate student at University Malaya, who may become Malaysia's first female astronaut if all goes well, fingers crossed, as well as Major Dr. Faiz Khalid, an astronaut at the Malaysian National Space Agency. And we're discussing the process and the roads by which the both of you will be going to space, more or less. So, Rushini, earlier you talked about how when you hit the top 15, that was when you thought, okay, yeah, I'm the only female here, and that continued all the way through to being, you know, top five. Did the lack of female finalists intimidate you or motivate you?
Well, I think it motivated me better. At first, I was actually surprised, like, why weren't there any other females who were as enthusiastic? Maybe people just assumed that it was, you know, meant for guys, or something like that. But I was really actually excited about the ultimate prize, that is that you get to win a trip to go to space. So I mean, who doesn't want to go to space? So that was really my my excitement. And I at first it was awkward to be around 14 other guys, but they were all very friendly, and the ex-Malaysia's crew, event crew, management team, they were also all very friendly. So I was quite comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. And how did you handle all the extra visibility and attention and negative comments that came, especially on social media? Because, of course, we're living in an increasingly social media crazy world, and a lot of the competition that you went through was very based on that.
Well, the last 30% was based on that social media voting that we had to do. Of course, there were some negative comments, but it is social media, so I believe that everyone has a right to express their point of view. But the way these certain comments were made were a little offensive, but I did not take them personally. They don't know me anyway, so who are they to, you know, render such comments? But in a way, as a woman, I felt that these comments actually made me work even harder, because that's when I realized that I was not just representing myself. It wasn't something individual anymore. It was like the effort that I put in would actually really make a difference to women in the rest of my country and also around the world as well, you know. So I think I managed to make that difference so far, and I think so I guess the negative comments turned out to be something positive after all. Yeah.
That's great.
And for the both of you, you know, what was it like? How did your family and friends react to the news, you know, of Roshini, you becoming the finalist and, you know, heading off to Florida, and Dr. Fayez, you becoming, you know, part of the final four?
Oh, for me, of course, they will call me. It's it came off like a shocker for them. But other than that, there's a lot of support. There's a lot of, you know, I can see that. And they would, they are happy. They are happy for me. But at the end of the day, I think all those visibility, all those attention is overwhelming. And it's also a challenge that you would, you know, center yourself to focus on the task, and it is easy to get carried away because of the attention. But I guess with the psychological training, the mental preparation, it helps in centering yourself on focusing on what you're supposed to do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, my family was really, really excited. I mean, and, you know, for a girl to get this far, and I come from a rural town, so even my hometown folks were, like, super, super excited. So I guess it was also a milestone for people from my hometown as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my cousins, I got a lot of phone calls, and a lot of people were, it was a really big exposure, but like what Major Faiz said, we have to still focus on our goals, so I had to organize my time, and it was overwhelming, a lot of new things that I had to learn to manage my time, manage my day and my errands, and yeah, so it's a whole new life right now, actually.
You have to really learn it fast, right?
Yes.
And when it comes to, you know, the space flight, what are you hoping to achieve going on it?
Well, if I do get to go on it, I really don't know until I really get there. You know, it's something so mystical. And we see it on movies, but, you know, feeling it is something really, really different. And I just really hope I will get to experience that and come back and share that with, you know, fellow Malaysians here.
Major Faiz, you know, what are the benefits of space research? I mean, this comes up a lot, you know, in discussion whenever we look at... this is a worldwide discussion, not just Malaysia. You know, mm-hmm. whenever we look at budgets and science and so on, right. there is a question of whether or not why so much money goes towards space research, because a lot of it does. You know, what do you view as the scientific benefits of space travel?
Okay. Well, it's always perceived that it is very expensive, yes, because people will always see the amount and also versus one person go up to space, right? And they, of course, it's not their fault that they couldn't see more than the surface value of whatever they can see. I asked myself that same thing before, but when I went to the space program, I could see that a lot of countries who, like Russia, US, Japan, yeah, they've been doing this for 50 years or so, and they are continue doing it. So it must be something important. And as my training goes further, I realize, because I mingle with a lot of professional astronauts, yeah, and I get exposed. It is actually a space flight, a human space flight program. There's a lot of types. You must understand that. For example, you must also understand that what type of program that we are involved in. Last time, astronaut, the word astronaut or cosmonaut is reserved for a professional career astronaut. Yeah, they are a government program which more of a science work. But now, of course, since 2004, we have the Spaceship One from the Ansari Group. So that itself already create a new breed of astronaut. We call it commercial astronauts, which the human now travel to space is much more easier and much more accessible. And for the program that I was in, it's more about scientific research. And when I asked them, why do you do this? And one of my professors told me that, do you realize that you're actually using a lot of things that we research on for 50 years? Simple things like, we don't have to go to GPS or satellites or live, football coverage or things like that. But small things like, for example, anti-scratch lenses on your watch, mm-hmm. your sunglasses,
ballpoint pens.
they use pencil. Yeah, but they create that. We have, nowadays we see movies. Spider-Man are more real, or the superheroes are more real because of the supercomputers. That was actually the first supercomputers was created due to the space program, invisible braces and stuff like that. Bulletproof vests, fireproof vests. These are all materials, like for example, thermoplastic materials, carbon fibers. These are all comes from human eager to explore and go to space. So, actually, a space flight program that is it is more of a R&D program. So when you look at it in a different perspective, R&D program, actually, there is a report from NASA on their space program. Every $1 that they put in, they receive back about $8 back. But of course, when you talk about R&D, you would have intangible and tangible benefits that you have to take into consideration. And like a university, like a laboratory that you would want to do an R&D, you open it today and you don't expect to have a commercial product by tomorrow. It takes continuity, it takes persistence. That's what the university, the research university are doing. That means it's a research field where you need to really allow the scientists or the astronaut or the community itself to continue doing their research, because the research will be at a very raw level before commercialization, and is the same as research in our normal research university. You wouldn't get the product right away, but because of that knowledge, and the best thing about space research is that it covers all sciences. It's not just aerospace, but it covers material science, it covers
physics.
Medical science, physics, it covers, you name it, astrophysics, it covers agriculture, biology, all sorts of things. So that's why a lot of countries who already in the space program continues doing it. Mm. Yeah.
Moving back to, moving back to the program that Roshini is a part of, how are you preparing to go to Florida? While we're talking about countries that have a proud tradition of space travel, mm-hmm. I think America is, amongst those countries. Yeah. So, what's it been like?
I've been just training on fitness mostly and doing some readings, watching YouTube videos, tutorials. So I did a lot of research on how astronauts in America especially, true. How they prepare, what kind of tests they have, mm-hmm. and the physical exercises that they would have to endure. Mm-hmm. And I just try to build on my strength and my stamina. Mm. So currently I'm just going through some programs that I tailored by myself. And I just hope that in this short time, I will be able to build up as much as I can.
Right.
Yeah.
How are you rating your chances?
Good. Well, if I got this far, I think I can make it. But I mean, you never know until you try. So I just want to get there and do my best and see what happens.
It's very fascinating. I read about the spacecraft that you will be going in
the
on
Lynx,
your program.
Yeah.
It's a suborbital spacecraft. And actually, by being in the spacecraft itself, if you go up to about 100 kilometers or so, you'll be able to really have a very wonderful view of the world. And I think that will be breathtaking. Yeah.
Okay.
And I couldn't agree more. I think if you've made it this far, you can go all the way. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
And what are you looking forward to most when you get to Florida?
Okay, the real excitement is actually in the space camp itself. There is the G-Force centrifuge. I'm sure you haven't been on that, Major Faiz.
Yes, it's it's okay. No worries.
I know.
It's okay.
I know. I've seen videos. I know some people say it's scary, but I am really excited to actually try that. I just really want to get into it and try it because it's almost similar as when you are leaving when you're rocketing out, right?
For a suborbital space flight like the Lynx, you will endure 2G upon launching. 2G is quite okay. Is that once you reach the space, yeah, it's about 100 kilometers above sea level, they were off the engine, so you will be doing a suborbital. It's not a full orbit, but it's suborbital. But it's still okay. You will feel no gravity. But when you come back in the atmosphere, there's a pull in of 4Gs. That you will feel a bit of heaviness. 4G, I think it's okay. It's going to be fun. It's okay, seriously. Yeah.
And it's not something that many people get to experience anyway. So, you know, you should just live it fully while you're there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think you shouldn't worry so much. It's okay. It will be fun.
Major Faiz, what advice do you have for Roshini before she departs for Florida?
Well, actually, I'm quite happy that I'm here and got a chance to really meet you before you go. I know it's tough. I think what you need to do right now is what you did before, which is focus on the important things. And believe me, whatever that you endure, of course it's not easy, but from what I have experienced, it teaches you to focus on the important things and never lose track. Go there, do what you're supposed to do, do it well. Of course, the other attention and all that is very overwhelming. It's also important. But at the end of the day, I think after trying your best and you get it or not, the transformation of you from now until after you endure the whole process, you're going to be a very different person, and it will actually enrich you, and this effect is a positive effect for the rest of your life. I think that is valuable, and after trying your best, and you hope for the best, and either way, it's going to be beneficial and positive for you as a person. So you are all for the winning.
Okay.
I think.
And my last question to the both of you would be, you know, what is your message to aspiring astronauts or just to people who, you know, grew up daydreaming of going to space, and when their kindergarten teachers asked them, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, they drew a man going to the moon. You know, what's your message to those people, to those dreamers?
Okay, Roshi, please.
Well, I think it's not just having a dream of being an astronaut. It could cater to anyone with a dream. I felt like I have sparked an inspiration among youth, you know, people my age and also women, fellow women, to, you know, although you are ordinary, but you can have extraordinary dreams. But don't just dream about it. Do something about it. Put your dreams into action and make it reality. And maybe sometimes the opportunity doesn't come to you. You know, it doesn't fall on your lap. You have to be more alert when you are looking around. And opportunity is actually everywhere. So, yeah, be alert, be cool, and, yeah, keep on the lookout for, you know, something to really happen.
Something great.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those aspiring astronauts, I think you shouldn't give up on your dreams, even if it's something bigger than a lot of other people's dreams, yeah? You tend to be, people would try to, they say they try to make you realistic, but actually what I can see is that the world is huge and life have a lot to offer for you, provided, like you said, Roshini said, you grasp it. So, but before doing all that, before, yeah, you have a big dream, but at the same time, I think for you to reach your own dream, you have to calibrate yourself towards that. For example, if you want to become, an astronaut, you have to calibrate yourself to fit in becoming an astronaut. So that means improving yourself every day. It doesn't come like, yes, the opportunity represents itself, yes, you grab it, but to calibrate yourself to get the opportunity, or life will drive you towards the opportunity, is what you do now and what you instill in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you match it, you will get it. This is not just about astronaut, it's about being anything in your life, your ambition. For example, if you want to become, I'm from dental background, if you want to become a dentist, you have to calibrate yourself to be a doctor, a dentist, because if you don't, you get the opportunity while going for the training, you will not be able to finish it because you are not ready for it. So I think, yes, have a big dream, then improve yourself every day, and I think that something great will happen in your life eventually.
Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Roshini, the best of luck.
We're
all rooting for you. I've been speaking today to Roshini Muniam, postgraduate student at University Malaya, who may also become Malaysia's first female astronaut, and Major Dr. Faiz Khalid, astronaut at the Malaysian National Space Agency. We've been discussing what it takes to be an astronaut on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.